Servant Leadership, Leading Today for a Better Tomorrow. Written by John Wallace Whitehead. Narrated by Steve Twitchell. Introduction. For most of my life, I haven't given much thought to the influence I have had on others or the influence others have had on me. My family, friends, teachers, co-workers, and pastors have all played a role in creating the man I am today. I can see and understand that the effects others have had and are having on my life's journey has led me to consider things and do things that I may not have done or considered doing had I not had those people in my life. Choices and decisions I have made, good, bad, or indifferent, have all changed and affected the direction of my life. Each choice and decision has been influenced in one way or another by someone else. This is the power of influence. These influences have led me to write this book. We're all following someone, and in turn, someone is following us. This makes us all leaders at one level or another. Therefore, we all have influence, and because of that influence, we are all having an effect. How we wield that influence and what kind of an effect we're having has everything to do with who we are following and those who are following us. The influence of others on our lives can be very subtle. In many cases, we're not even aware that we are reacting and behaving just like someone else. For many of us, leading is a foreign concept. We believe leading is for someone brighter, stronger, and more qualified than we are. In my life, the thought of leading or being a leader was never even a consideration. My goals and ambitions early on were never more than to enjoy myself and my life. The idea that I would someday be positioned to lead anyone or anything was the furthest thing from my mind. I was living with little concern for anything or anyone else but me. My place in life was assured. My future would be the same as that of my parents and their parents before them, which would consist of working and living day to day with no illusions of grandeur. However, unbeknownst to me, my future, as with everything in life, was subject to change. That is exactly what happened in 1981, when I married my wife, Bonnie, and then in 1982, when our first child, Lindsay, was born, and then 6 years later, when our second child, John, came along. Suddenly, I was faced with the reality that other people were counting on me to care for them and to provide for them. The thought of someone else relying on me for their future and counting on me to lead and provide for them was very daunting, especially since I had no idea how to do that or what that even looked like. Why? The answer to this question is what I hope to provide in this book. I'm certain there are a lot of other people out there who are feeling similarly overwhelmed by the weight of the responsibility they bear for the life and well-being of someone else. People who may never have had an example to follow that they can use to help them love and lead those they are blessed to care and provide for. The expertise and insights I have on the topic of leadership and the need for leadership in our society come from my own life and experiences. My training ground for understanding the need for leadership in every area of our lives started with growing up in a home where there were no real leadership principles to follow. As with almost every area of my life, I've had to learn from the mistakes I watched others make, and then by making mistakes myself. Before I continue, I want to say that I have lost both of my parents in the last 12 years, and I would never want anyone to assume that what I am writing in any way diminishes my love and respect for them. I'm writing about them at this point simply to use my life as an example of one in which leadership models and examples were not everything they could have been. Conversely, I also know now that my parents were not leading the way they should have, simply because they too were never shown examples of what it means to lead well. And so, as with my mom and dad and like so many others, my siblings and I perpetuated a negative cycle of emulating poor role models and ineffective examples of leadership. Unfortunately, this truth is not limited to my family. It's being lived out and passed down from generation to generation across our nation and world. By virtue of their upbringing and experiences, neither of my parents had a parent or person in their lives who was leading by example. They never really had anyone to follow, or maybe better said, they never had anyone worth following. They were never exposed to an example of what it means to be a servant leader. This is the main point of this book, and what I hope to help us see going forward. My contention is that we all need servant leaders in our lives if we're going to be able to provide the type of leadership for those in our influence that will assure them of a better tomorrow. To do this, we will need to be and become servant leaders ourselves. What do I mean when I say servant leader? Servant leaders love unconditionally, live sacrificially, and leave a legacy worth following. Servant leaders realize that they can be both a catalyst and a diminishing factor in the lives of those around them, and they care enough to be a catalyst. Servant leaders are intentional and strive to live in a way that can be modeled and emulated by others. Servant leaders understand the value of people. Servant leaders care about others, and they let others know that they care. There are two other types and models of leadership we will look at as we go forward that are being practiced and modeled in many areas of our lives. One is positional leadership. Positional leadership is a leadership style or model that we see lived out in many areas of our lives. Positional leaders are people who have assumed or been given a position of leadership within a group or organization, often regardless of their abilities or qualifications. Positional leaders can be positioned as leaders because of who they are, whom they know, or how long they've been a part of an organization. Therefore, positional leaders lead simply based on their position. Unlike servant leaders, positional leaders are not necessarily intentional or striving to live lives that can be modeled or emulated. Positional leaders may not be leaders at all, but because of the authority that may come with their position, they have an impact on those who are exposed to or placed under their leadership. Positional leaders may be more concerned with their position than they are with those they are positioned to lead. The other type of leadership we will look at is hierarchical leadership. Hierarchical leadership, which is probably the most common style of leadership, is best defined as top-down leadership. Our educational institutions, governments, businesses, and religious organizations all adhere to the hierarchical leadership model. Hierarchical leaders tend to be authoritarian, and thus the standards they set and impose on others may not apply to themselves. Like positional leaders, hierarchical leaders wield their authority because of their position within the hierarchy. Like a chain of command, each person within this structure answers to the one above them. Hierarchical leaders may lead by lording over others instead of loving others. My hope as we go forward is to help us see that being a servant leader is the better way simply because of the selfless nature of serving. You can be a servant leader regardless of your position, how you obtained it, or where you are in a hierarchical structure. Positional leaders and hierarchical leaders both can be servant leaders as well. Each type of leader just needs to be willing to love and value others at least as much as they love and value themselves. Servant leadership is a timeless principle that creates opportunities for multiplication. Servant leadership fosters an environment for growth and sustainability that may fall short in situations where positional or hierarchical leadership models alone are practiced. This is my challenge to you. Do you believe that you are a leader? Do you believe that you have influence over others in your life and the opportunity to help them become more than they think they can become? If you answered yes to these questions, you then need to ask yourself what type of leadership style you're modeling. Where did you learn this type of leadership? Is it effective, and are you willing to change if it is not? This is ultimately the goal of this book, that each and every one of us would be willing and able to understand we are the leaders in our world. We all have influence, and we all are having an effect. We are all leading someone in some way. If we can agree that this is true, we can understand how we are leading and can learn to be better leaders. That better leader is a servant leader, one who is leading today for a better tomorrow. Chapter 1. A Leadership Vacuum. A void exists in many people today. A leadership vacuum created by leaders who are not necessarily equipped or capable of leading themselves or others well. This void can go back generations and, if left unaddressed, will continue to expand the size of the leadership vacuum for many more generations to come. This leadership vacuum expands naturally and organically across every area of our lives as we grow and mature. Regardless of the path or profession we choose as adults, we bring the model of leadership we've been exposed to with us wherever we go. If our lives have been devoid of servant leadership, or if we have been subjected to poor leadership, then we will be the ones expanding this vacuum. We do so by modeling the type of leadership we've been exposed to. In most cases, we will do so without considering the effect that our leadership model is having on our lives and world, and without considering the effect that the model of leadership we have been exposed to has had on us. Whether we are parents, teachers, employees, business owners, politicians, pastors, or priests, we are the sum of our experiences, and those experiences create who we are and how we lead. If our example of what it means to lead came out of a vacuum where there were no worthy examples to follow, then it's not unreasonable to assume this leadership vacuum will continue to expand and grow with each of us. Using myself as an example, I can say without reservation that a leadership vacuum existed in my life growing up. My childhood was devoid of any servant leadership role models. I made decision after decision and choice after choice that could have been avoided or improved had I been shown a better way. Erosion of the family unit. For many of us, leadership was ineffectual, perhaps non-existent, in our homes or within our families when and where we grew up. The long-term ramifications of that failed leadership have been tragic for some. When there is a failure of leadership in the home, the erosion of the family unit is the result. One of the most memorable experiences I had as a child occurred when I was 7 years old. My mom had a boyfriend who used to beat her, leaving her with black eyes and a busted lip. One evening, as I lay sleeping, I was awakened by a loud noise. When I got out of bed, I found my mom standing over her boyfriend. She had just shot him and was threatening to shoot him again. I begged her not to shoot, and in the end, she didn't. My brother David and I were then sent to live with our biological father and his wife. I don't remember if we were there for weeks or months, but it seemed like an eternity. Our stepmother beat David and me on numerous occasions, leaving bruises up and down our backs and legs. Obviously, this was not a good example of leadership, which we experienced firsthand. Eventually, we were reunited with our mom, and what a glorious day that was. My mom's parents were not loving or nurturing. She and her sister lived in boarding schools for a time. Her mother was an alcoholic, and her father was distant and unavailable. Her parents were divorced when my mom was in her early teens. I believe that this led my mom to later seek out the love she never received from her parents, specifically her father, which led to her choosing the wrong kinds of men. She had three children by two different men by the time she was 23, and a fourth child by a third man when she was 31. I was her first child, and I was born when she was only 17. My mom was divorced four times throughout her life, and she never really found the happiness she was seeking and so richly deserved. My dad, too, was exposed to a very harsh environment as a child. His father was also unloving and very demanding. His mother was timid and afraid of her husband. Growing up, my dad's father slapped him around if he didn't do the things that were expected of him. During one such beating, his eardrum burst, which affected his hearing in that ear for the rest of his life. My dad was a kind-hearted and caring man who adopted three children when he was not yet 30 years old. But he was also a severe alcoholic. His alcoholism caused him to lose everything he had until the very end of his life, when he was reunited with his kids, who loved him dearly. I believe he died knowing this was true. During my childhood, I attended about 10 different schools. Moving so often led me to be drawn toward the outsiders and those on the fringe of the social circles that exist at the earliest ages in our schools. I remember clearly the dysfunction in many of the families and homes of those of us who were on the outside looking in. None of us cared whether we were doing the right things. We just did the things that felt right. This constant change in schools and communities exposed me to various cultures and people who seemed to have one thing in common. We all were figuring life out as we went along. My mom and dad were married when I was 11 years old and divorced twice before I was 17. This resulted in the erosion of our family unit for my siblings and me. We were left to learn from our mistakes instead of being guided on how we could avoid them. As I've illustrated through some of my own experiences, the unwillingness or inability to lead has led to an ever-increasing decay or erosion of the family unit. This erosion has led to generations without examples of leadership in their lives. As a result, people who've grown up in leaderless homes have no idea what a leader is, and they have no desire to lead themselves. The problem of a leadership vacuum in our families and homes is epidemic in our nation and world. This problem is not unique to any race, creed, socioeconomic position, or religious group. The number of unwed mothers, the number of young people who do not graduate from high school or attend college, the violence among groups of people, and the anger boiling over in our culture can all be attributed in one way or another to failed leadership, or at the very least, poor examples of leadership. The erosion of culture and family, the lack of personal responsibility, and the loss of a desire to achieve are issues that cannot be debated with any honesty without concluding that many areas of our lives, our nation, and our communities are in decline and in need of redirection and revitalization. Failed leadership is directly attributable to these issues. We can easily see the effect that the lack of exemplary leadership has on families who are left neglected by husbands and fathers. Many of these men have vacated their leadership roles and responsibilities to pursue self-interest, wealth, and short-lived acclaim, instead of leading in their homes and modeling leadership for their families. Perhaps it is a fear of responsibility that leads many young men to abandon the children they helped create. For young women, like in my mom's life, it may be a longing for a male figure to love them and care for them that leads them to give themselves to young men in unprotected sex, which leads to husbandless families and fatherless children. Generational poverty and hopelessness that stem from unmet needs and unrealized desires no doubt are huge contributors to these unaddressed issues. We can also easily recognize a decline in personal responsibility, which in many cases has led to a lack of desire to achieve, both byproducts of failed leadership within these homes and families. The lack of good examples of leadership has led our culture to being self-centered, self-focused, and self-absorbed. When we are the only thing we consider, we cannot consider anything else. Selfishness is certainly not an attribute of a leader. But if we look around at those we perceive to be leaders, celebrities, athletes, politicians, and other public figures, we may conclude that selfishness is a natural attribute of leadership. When we look at our own lives, however, we are more likely to conclude that this is not what we want to exemplify to the next generations. As I have stated, I believe that there is a leadership vacuum that affects every facet of our lives and culture. It most definitely begins within our families and in our homes. As I alluded to earlier, I can look at my own life and see the areas in which a lack of effective leadership existed. When I do, I easily see where the choices I made and difficulties I faced could have been different had I been shown a better way, or had there been a leader worth following. Having lived the most formative years of my life without a true role model, I can see why I made many of the choices I made. My decisions regarding the kinds of people to hang around and the kinds of habits to pick up certainly would have been wiser had I had someone in my life demonstrating wisdom. I could have also benefited from discipline imposed by a leader whose sole purpose was to demonstrate their love by leading. Early on in life, we're more likely to gravitate toward bad habits and make bad decisions when we witness those in positions of leadership doing the same things. We will look at this idea in more detail later. Regardless of whether you realize you are a leader, you need to realize someone is following you. The question is whether your example is worth following. The evidence of failed leadership in our culture is reflected in the number of broken homes, fractured families, and fatherless children. This state of affairs is so commonplace that it has practically become an accepted part of our culture. The results of this lack of leadership are increasingly alarming. Numerous statistics give credence to my contention as to the results of failed leadership in our homes and families. The absence of fathers in communities results in behaviors that stunt job creation and increase dependency on welfare. Among them are sexually predatory behavior in which older men impregnate younger women, resulting in babies born out of wedlock. Arguments over child support payments often result in domestic violence, and some men even take the welfare checks from these girlfriends or mothers of their children, sometimes collecting from a half a dozen different mothers per month. Fatherlessness affects communities in dire ways. The following statistics reflect the percentage of certain populations that come from fatherless homes. 63% of youth suicides. 90% of all homeless and runaway youth. 85% of children who exhibit behavioral disorders. 71% of high school dropouts. 70% of youths in state institutions. 75% of adolescent patients in substance abuse centers. 85% of rapists motivated by displaced anger. Children raised in homes without their biological fathers are much more likely to end up in jail. Besides socioeconomic disadvantages, a father's absence affects boys and young men more than their race, their parents' education, or the culture in which they're brought up. These types of problems or behaviors are not limited to boys and young men. One study showed that more than half of women in prison grew up without the presence of both their parents. Children's educational achievements are also affected by the presence or absence of biological fathers. One study reveals that children living with their married biological father tested at a significantly higher academic achievement level than those living with a non-biological father. Fatherless homes are producing children who are struggling to find a productive path in our society. The number of children failing to achieve at the most basic levels is evidence of the need for leadership in the home. In my own life, my mother did her best to fill the gap left by divorce, adoption, and alcoholism. But given those issues, along with the missing example of how to be a man, what it means to take responsibility for my actions, I was left to figure things out through trial and error, which led to a lot of errors. Many of the mistakes I made growing up were a direct result of not having a model to follow. I know that I am not alone. When I look at the statistics of those whose lives had similar beginnings as mine, I praise God that my life didn't take a similarly negative turn. I will say without reservation that there are some in my family who have suffered mightily from the lack of leadership we experienced growing up. Our homes and families need leaders who can provide an example worth following. By simply being present and living a consistent lifestyle, we can provide guidance, encouragement, stability, and structure. Each of these qualities can and will radically affect the life of the next generation. Where are the leaders in our homes? What model of leadership do homes without leaders follow? Where are the leaders who can show sons how to be husbands and fathers? Where are leaders who can show daughters how to become wives and mothers? A culture does and will reflect its leaders. A society filled with leaders will thrive. One without leaders will die. This leadership vacuum is not limited to just our homes and families. It crosses all divides and impacts every facet of our lives.